Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour Extra Bit with me, Harriet Minter. Each week I'll bring you an interesting little snippet from my radio show on Talk Radio. And this week I talk with Lottie Dryden, aka The Tummy Diaries, about IBS. An issue which affects 20% of the population, but particularly women in their 20s and 30s. I'm also joined by vocal coach and presenter Cary Grant, and nurse and star of E4's The Sex Clinic, Sarah Malindwa.
We are also joined in the studio by just the brilliant Lottie Dryden. You might have seen her on Instagram, at The Tummy Diaries. Lottie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us... You are really open about suffering from IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Not something that many women will talk about. How did you come to decide, right, this is it, I am just going to tell the world?
So I have suffered with what I call tummy troubles for probably about, well, since I was like late teens, early 20s. I had no idea what was going on. I went through various different tests and I got diagnosed finally after about 7 years with IBS and tried to sort of pretend it wasn't real because it doesn't sound very glamorous. No one really wants to say they've got irritable bowel syndrome. But I was really struggling with anxiety around it and especially around the food side of things, not knowing what would trigger me, what would trigger the bloating and the discomfort. And at the time, even when I started about 3 or so years ago, there wasn't much information online. So I thought, right, I'm going to start an Instagram account and sort of, it started more of a sort of food blog and sort of documenting what I was eating as part of this low FODMAP diet, which is the diet that they advise for IBS. And thought, I'll try and use it to get some inspiration and also hopefully inspire others and just give a bit of comfort. And it sort of evolved from food to sort of sharing my whole life and all the glamorous and non-glamorous sides of having IBS.
It's really interesting, actually, because it's about 20 years ago now that I first started talking publicly about having Crohn's disease.
Oh, really?
And I was one of the first people that talked about my bum. I'm like, you're going to talk about your bum on the radio or the newspaper. I was like, I'll talk about it everywhere, just to talk about IBD. But I think for people with IBS, because there's IBD, which is inflammatory bowel disease, and IBS is one of those terms that is basically given to people. And it's really awful because... if they don't really know what you've got, just call it IBS. Yeah. So people, like for you, that was obviously a moment of, this is great, I've now got these three little letters that will mean something. But for many people, it doesn't really, it still doesn't mean anything.
No.
So it just means they don't really know what to do, but you've clearly got something going on with your tummy.
Absolutely that. And that's why I think they just don't give you any guidance. I mean, when they said it, it'd been sort of thrown around a couple of times with nothing much else. But when they finally did it, they scrawled on a piece of paper, low FODMAP diet, and that was it. There was nothing else, no guidance of what to do next, which I think is the hardest part. And that's what can feel so isolating and frustrating.
So what happens for you? What are your symptoms of IBS? How did you end up being diagnosed with it?
So for me, my main symptoms are the bloating and the pain. So it's not just when people put, I mean, that's a dangerous bit on Instagram. People started almost normalising bloating. And bloating's normal to the point of if you overeat or eat a bit too much.
Right.
A lot of people can bloat.
Yeah, we can all bloat, yeah.
Absolutely. But to the point of being in pain and bloating all the time, that's when it's not normal and you need to see a GP and understand what's going on. So yeah, for me, bloating is the biggest thing. And at the time I was actually feeling sick a lot, which I now know was actually my bad relationship with food building up. And I thought that was probably, so that's why they've taken doing so many tests, because I was being sick. But I realised that was actually an eating disorder that had developed from the anxiety built up around food and not knowing what I could eat, thinking that everything I ate would then make me ill. And I was making myself ill mentally and physically from it.
It's really interesting. So in my 20s, I got diagnosed with IBS. And when it happened, the doctor said to me, well, it's probably being caused by stress, so try to be less stressed. And I remember at the
time, thank you.
At the time being like, well, I would be less stressed if this wasn't happening. And that psychological link between our health and our body and how we're feeling and then the anxiety and pressure we put on ourselves because of it, what for you really was it just not knowing what you could eat, or was it also because for women it's a big thing, right?
Yeah.
Like how we feel about our bodies. We don't talk about the fact that we poo. We don't talk about the fact that we fart. You know, it's suddenly a very unfemale thing to be happening. Which one was it for you?
Yeah, I think all of the above pretty much, yeah. I think the body image was a big part of it for me, not knowing what... Like you talk about accepting your body, never mind loving it, but just accepting it. But every day it's different. So you look at yourself.
The house a size 10 and then you come back a size 14.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's so hard to accept something that's changing every single day or hour. That was a thing that I really found hard. And also, yes, the link between the stress side, the gut health and the mental health, because there's the gut-brain axis. And again, that's something I didn't know when I had to proactively figure out myself from researching online. And I think that's the thing that people struggle with so much, because at the time I thought it was just food, but actually the biggest thing that's helped me is managing my stress, sort of looking at my sleep and exercise and looking at the 360 picture rather than just diet.
And it could be quite a lonely sort of thing to suffer from as well, because there's no actual test. You can't actually go and do a test to say, oh, you're positive for IBS. It's a matter of sort of going to your GP, they do a physical examination, they rule out things like gluten intolerance, otherwise known as celiac disease. And so once they've ruled out all these things, then it's like, oh, okay, well then this is what it must be. And then after that, you're sort of, it's hard to then know where to go from that. And you know, you can have things like buscopan, but essentially the best way to treat it is through diet and you know, knowing what to eat, what things, you know, trigger it off. But if you do then have an underlying, you know, eating disorder, that can then having IBS can then just make that 10 times worse.
Yeah, definitely.
So you follow now the low FODMAP diet?
So I did when I was first handed my little bit of paper.
What is it?
So it is basically, at first it starts as elimination diet. So FODMAPs are a series of short chain carbohydrates. And at first, for the first 4 to 6 weeks, you have to cut them all out. So it ranges from garlic, gluten, onion, loads of vegetables, apples. It's a very limited diet and it is really, really tricky to follow. So you should do that with the help of a dietitian. So that's the first stage. And then you start to reintroduce things. So you reintroduce a group at a time, and then you can understand what you can personally tolerate. And then you then maintain that with whatever you can have. So a lot of people get stuck on that elimination side, which is then why it's so hard. And I did, because I didn't have the guidance. There wasn't a lot of research out there. But now I know that there's actually only a small handful of foods that really trigger me, which is gluten, garlic and onion. If I have in excess a lot of things, like I couldn't go and down a pint of orange juice, like that would just leave my tummy in bits. So it's, just understanding what your personal tolerances are.
The thing with an elimination diet that's so difficult is that if you get a reaction, you've then got to go back to eating. Well, in my day, it was nothing, actually. You can eat anything.
Yeah, did you have to do the liquid diet?
I had a drink, and I can stay on that for 3 months and not have any food.
Gosh, yeah.
But with that, you know, so something makes you ill, you eat pineapple, you have a reaction, so then it's 2 weeks back to the drink before you can go back to trying new foods. So even though, I think everyone thinks, oh, you get one of those patch test things where they just find out. It's not like that. No. It's intolerance, not allergy.
Absolutely that. And I think also then going back to the stress thing, you could have had pineapple and that could have been what triggered you, or you could have had an argument with your boyfriend and that stress could have, and it's like, how do I know what it is that's causing this?
But also it must just affect your day-to-day life. I mean, food is such a big thing that we do. obviously we eat every day, and just going out socially, being at work and sharing food is having picnics and going out for friends' dinners. And how did that affect your social life?
Yeah, I think that was had such a big effect. I've always been a foodie. My dad is a chef, and I've always amazing. God. And I just loved it, especially garlic and onion. I would put that in everything, like cheesy, garlicky bread. Yeah. So that did really affect me, and I'm a social person, so going out for meals and things like that, it can be really isolating and quite embarrassing. Before I was used to it, it would have to sort of speak to the waiter and say, oh, I'm really sorry, I can't have this. And they'd think you're fussy.
And they think you're a fussy eater and things,
absolutely. So, yeah, I think obviously with anything, the more experience you get with it, and just trying to be quite assertive, calling ahead and things like that. To
they
check
do say that the things that you crave are often the things that you are intolerant to.
Oh, really? Mm. I mean, I am definitely
I'm sure that's
craving
not,
garlic.
That's not science. Sarah, I'm just putting the thing, that's not science. That's just me.
I think that sounds
what,
true to
that's
me.
That's what the Crohn's disease and colitis people talk about a lot. And they'll say, that's the thing I've been craving.
Yeah. Okay, we are going to keep talking about this because it's fascinating.
Thank you for listening to Badass Women's Hour. You can hear us every Saturday on Talk Radio from 7 p.m. for a full 3 hours, yes, 3 hours of opinion, debate and general setting the world to rights. Now, let's get back to our guest.
Lottie, before the break, we were talking about, you know, that kind of awkward thing in restaurants where you're like, oh, and I can't have this, oh, and this, and... But what's it like in your personal life as well? Like, can you talk about this with your friends, with your partner? How did you get comfortable discussing it with people?
I think my Instagram definitely helped me get more comfortable because my friends would, well, once they discovered it was me, when I started showing my face on there, that I would be a lot more open online than face-to-face because it is easier. And then that would... that slowly some of them go, oh, actually, I think I might have that, or I get the same sort of things, or my friend has this, my mum has this. So that definitely helped. I think, yeah, it is a really tricky one, and it can be quite embarrassing to talk about. I mean, my husband hates talking about poo, but I've slowly forced him over the years to talk about it a bit more, and now he just rolls his eyes. So I think, again, it's just the more we can be open, like anything, just like mental health or anything like that, the more we open up, the more we find
that... normalise it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
Don't you think one of the worst things is flimsy public toilet door with a queue?
No, or on the train. You think it's going to open up.
Oh. I mean, that's just... the thought of that has brought me out in a kind of stress sweat. Yeah. Do you think social media has helped us become more open about our bodies? Because on the one hand, I think what you're doing is amazing and you're talking about something that I don't know affects so many women. And I remember when I had it and I didn't tell anyone. And then I told my mum. My mum was like, oh, yeah, I had that for most of my 20s and 30s. And I was like... Didn't want to pass that information on.
Yeah,
no.
And mums have got a lot to answer.
Yeah,
they really do.
Genetics. Like so on the one hand, I think it's great, but then on the other hand, I do see quite often social media influencers promoting or pushing a particular diet or lifestyle, and they'll do this for a year or so, and then suddenly they're like, "Oh, and now I've been diagnosed with IBS, and I want to tell you all about it," and it makes me really angry because I'm like, I think. Potentially some of that might have come from your lifestyle. And even if it didn't, if you are not healthy, pushing what you're claiming is a really healthy lifestyle on other people through your social media feels very irresponsible.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's something that I try to be really careful with. I wish I'd say I am not a healthcare professional. Mm. I'm just sharing my own experience. And I try to more share sort of the emotions around it rather than this is what I am exactly what I'm eating. But I think it can definitely be damaging. And I think as well for people to see even their favourite celebrity say, oh, I've got IBS, and they just think, oh, that must be me. Whereas actually it's so important to go and get your own diagnosis because like you mentioned earlier, it could be celiac disease, it could be Crohn's disease, there could be so many different things it could be, and it's important to rule those out. And yeah, I think you need to find a diet that works for you, not follow some sort of fad diet, and that's difficult, which is why I think it's just so important to be so selective of who you're following and look at what they're saying. And if that doesn't sit well with you, then unfollow, mute, whatever you need to do.
I mean, the sort of lifestyle things that I'm thinking about, that I remember when I was going through it, like knowing absolutely where every single available loo was on the way from work till home, because, you know, I could be on the tube and be like, okay, now.
Yeah.
And one thing that really sort of impacted me was like that thing where you'd run into a pub and just be like, I need to use your loo, I'm really sorry. And like die for it. And sometimes bar staff were just like lovely and kind, can be like, yes, that way, love, fine. And the other times, sorry, not a customer, No, and I would be like running for the living, like, I will buy something on the way back. Yeah.
And now you need a code for most places, public toilets, which I just think is horrible as well. I mean, like, it's nature's calling, like, you have to answer, you know? So I just think it is ridiculous. Like,
yeah, you can
get keys. Right? We have a big key that you can use.
That's it, yeah. And same with IBS. I think it's the IBS network. I think it's them, the charity. They can give you the same, the cards. Yeah. And with for the ones that have got pass codes, they give you the pass code, don't they, for it. So that can really be helpful. But, yeah, that can definitely be difficult.
But also imagine telling somebody who you literally just walked in and just said, you know, it's just like...
You don't want to be shouting over the cup, I've got irritable bowel syndrome.
The worst one I get is when people go, before you've gone into it, they go, oh, you're Cary Grant off the telly. And then you think, I just can't go in that toilet now. Yeah. I just can't do it. I don't know what's going to happen, but, just killed it.
Brilliant. Has it changed... Obviously, in the last 20 years, it has changed. I'm assuming it's changed how we talk about it. Has it made life easier for sufferers either of IBS or...
100% it has. Yeah. It used to be so hidden, which is why people like your mother never talked about it. Mm-hmm. And when I first got diagnosed in 1986, no one talked about having... No one talked about their bottoms, male or female. It just wasn't talked about. But I think now it is, and I think that really helps. There's the whole Get Your Belly Out campaign, which is for people that have... colostomy or ileostomy bags, and you know, even, you know, I've always said if I had to have one of those, because I've had surgery and had a big part of my bowel taken out, but if I had to have one of those, if I had a stoma, I'd put sequins on it and start it out. And you've got to find a way of making it work for you, which is what you're doing, which is great. It's brilliant.
Do you ever have times now where you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't been so open about it, it's all people want to talk to me about, or you know, everyone's looking at me and being like, oh, I don't know where she's going.
I mean, sometimes, like, no, I never really have those moments. I think it's funny, like, in Tesco's and stuff, sometimes people stop me and go, oh, you're Lottie, oh, can I talk? And I end up having a chat about IBS in, like, the chocolate aisle for 10 minutes. Yeah. And I think that's amazing. I think it's, there's such a community around it, and I feel very lucky. There's a lot of parts of social media that aren't quite as safe or quite as nice, but I feel the community in sort of the wellness and the gut health side of things, everyone is so supportive, and I find that people will even leave comments, not even to me, but to other people. So someone's left a comment and someone else will reply saying, oh, I get
and
the
they
same
have the conversation.
And I think that's amazing to watch.
That's community.
There is a full community around it, and everyone is so supportive and starting to talk about it, which I think that's
do
what
they talk about sex.
No, people do sometimes ask about the confidence you have in the bedroom with things like that, but I don't get that a lot, no. Do you want to talk about sex?
No, I just think it's the next frontier, actually, for people with bowel issues.
Yeah, and I think dating as well. There's, I think it's called Guts UK or something. There's a dating app for people that suffer with gut issues and chronic illnesses, and I think that's amazing that then...
You can just fart your way through the bedroom.
Absolutely.
Windows open. Like, I'm thinking of that thing when you go away with somebody for the first time, you're suddenly in a hotel room and the bathroom is right there, and every time you have to turn the tap on.
This is your life right now. This is you right now. See,
that's why we're talking about it.
For my whole life.
You in quarantine, Harriet.
Are you doing?
Are you at the $10 going to the vending machine?
I turn the tap on. I'm like,
I turn the tap on.
We're still very early on. We just don't need to know that about each other. Lottie, if somebody's listening to this and they're like, oh, I think that sounds familiar, it sounds like some of the stuff I suffer from, what would your advice be for them?
My advice would be to book an appointment with your GP and get anything ruled
maybe
out.
Maybe not right now.
Oh, maybe not right now. Yeah, maybe. For now, I would say a really good thing is to start tracking what's going on. So what you're eating, but also everything else in your life, anything that you're doing that could be causing stress, any exercise, your sleep pattern, things like that. Because once you do go to a GP or you get referred to a dietitian, that's something that you can give them.
Yeah, you're fully armed already.
Absolutely. Mm. And then that'll give you a head start, and they can say, right, actually, it might not be food, it might be this, and they can work with you in a really prescriptive, personalised way.
Which is a good point, because like you said, they're going to tell you, if you go there and you don't do these things before, they'll tell you to go and do them.
Absolutely.
So then it's great if you have this diary for like a month or so and say, look, these are the patterns I've noticed that it's worse when I do this and this and that. And then it's easy to get that diagnosis. Because I mean, how hard is it to get an appointment with a GP and then getting a follow-up appointment? And so that's very good tip.
Yeah, you can get a head start. Yeah. And I think the other big thing for me is just trying to find stress management as well, because you can get yourself so worked up. There has been so many times.
Sleep.
I end up crying over my bloat, and then the bloat gets worse because I'm stressing. They're talking to each other. And so I think if you can find ways, like for me, I've just started meditating. People would advise that for ages, and I've been like, nah, I've started. And it has changed my life. So I would say if you can find a way, whether it's even just going for a walk, having a dance, whatever it is to sort of relieve some stress, that should really help too.
Also, NHS website is always good. Public Health Wales, Public Health Scotland, Public Health England. Those are always reputable websites to look up.
Brilliant. Thank you. Lottie Drynan here. You can find her on Instagram at The Tummy Diaries if you want to chat to her. Thank you for listening to the Badass Women's Hour podcast, Extra Bits. If you liked it, rate, review and subscribe. 5 stars, please. And of course, you can chat to me in the meantime at Harriet Minter.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.